Welcome to Cider Chat. In 2002, Lee McAlpine of Darby, Montana, opened Montana's first commercial cidery. And in this coming year, 2022, she'll be celebrating her 20th year. Which is why this here episode 293 is so special, because Lee is our featured guest. Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. I am so thrilled to have the opportunity to share my conversation with Lee McAlpine with you. I have been thinking about how I can get to Montana or how I could kind of track her down and have a little bit of a chat, because when not making cider, she's out having fun, which even she admits is something that she likes to do more often than not. And as a little teaser, she is looking for a new cider maker for Montana Cider Works, actually to take over the business. So you're going to hear a bit about that later on in this episode. But if you are looking for a location such as Montana, which brings everything that an outdoor enthusiast would want in the world, including a long history of apple growing, we're going to hear a bit from Lee about all that. And maybe this might pique your interest to say, hey, you know, I live in Montana, or I'm ready to move there. So stay tuned for that. And for those of you who are new to this podcast, I just want to take the time to welcome you. Know that we're going to be talking a little bit about news out and about. I have email to share with you, and then we'll be going to our featured conversation with Lee McAlpine of Montana Cider Works. So thanks for taking me along, whether I am in your pocket via your phone or you're listening on a desktop or somewhere. Hopefully you are enjoying a cider. So I'll be right back with a little bit of news from out and about in Ciderville. This past weekend, I returned to a Sorbus domestica tree. If you don't know what a Sorbus domestica is, it is related to the apples and pears. It's all in the same family, but it's kind of unknown. And I have two wonderful, I want to say magnificent episodes, because once you hear Arnold, who is a Parisian, speaking about his passion for Sorbus domestica, you, like me, are going to get hooked. So I'm going to put a link in the show notes, but in the meanwhile, if you just want to Google, can Sorbs save the world, Cider Chat, I'm sure it's going to come up somewhere on your feed, and that will set you on the right course. Anywho, this tree is just absolutely magnificent, the one that I visited, and as a species overall, because not only is the wood really incredible for its strength, I think it's called the tensile strength or something like that, it's stronger than oak. Sorbus domestica revolutionized the whole industrial age because the wood was so strong that it was used for the cogwheels, these intricate circular wheels that would help run machinery. That was all Sorbus domestica. So the wood alone is just incredible. And then there's the fruit. In fact, I just posted a TikTok about my visit there, and you can check it out at Cider Chat on TikTok. And I did try some of the fruit because it's the fall, and this is the time that you would eat it or ferment it. They're kind of small, not much larger than a quarter, an American quarter, I would say. And once it was really, you know, ripened, all I had to do was kind of like slightly tear it open, and there it was. And the flesh is buttery looking, and it actually has almost that kind of soft texture of butter. There's no grainy experience at all, and it was delicious, much like applesauce with its own, you know, hit of sorb. So that was fun. That's how I spent a little bit of my last week. It was actually my birthday week. I'm a 10-10 baby. And so this time of year, it's just so much fun because it's really, really colorful outside. And everybody's happy around you. So that's always really nice when it's your birthday. And so went out to the Arnold Arboretum at the end of the week, my birthday week, and did that. And then went to the Van Gogh exhibit, which was really something. This is a Dutch painter, of course, and he was renowned. And during his psychiatric care, he did over 300 paintings. And wow, wow, wow. It's just a cacophony of colors at this exhibit. I had so much fun and then ate some great Indian food and had with me a little can of one of my favorite cider makers in the Northeast, and that would be Eden's Cider. They package these really nice little cans of their select ciders. And, you know, when I go, you know, I throw a can in there. And I just want to say, Eleanor Leger, it went fantastic with Indian food. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a great India restaurant. I'm going to recommend it. It's called Shanti out in Dorchester. So if you're in the Boston area, this is really kind of considered Boston, even though it's like Dorchester, a really cool and up-and-coming area. So that's my show and tell. It's so much fun. Oh my God. As I was driving past the Sorbus Domestica tree on the way, because you can actually see it from the road, I was yelling out, "Goodbye, Mr. Sorb." I don't know why I consider it a mister, but you know, you just get these energetic feelings from trees, and I don't know, it's just like, you know, Transformers is like Sorbus Domestica. Kind of has a masculine twang to it. I don't know. It works for me. All right. I have more news from out and about. I'll be right back.
Walking through the orchards.
If you recall, episode 286 is titled A Living Language for Cider. And in that episode, we heard from Richie Brady, who is helping to find a systemic language for cider with tips from historical writings out of Ireland. Well, as promised, his thesis on this topic is now out, and I'm putting a link in the show notes to 286. So just go to Cider Chat. You could go ciderchat.com/podcast. That'll bring you to the main archived page for all the podcast episodes. Again, we are nearing 300, so this is a good page to know about. And just look up episode 286, and as you scroll down to the bottom, you're going to see a link that is under Contact for Richie Brady, and there will be the link for the thesis on this topic. Really worthwhile. He's absolutely amazing. And this episode, like the Sorbus Domestica episode with Arnold, just blew my mind. What he was able to kind of uncover from historical writings from the Gentleman's Society of Dublin back in the day, and how they were really researching cider at that time and creating a lexicon, if you will, for cider. It was pretty cool. So check it out. Again, that's episode 286, the thesis from Richie Brady's studies on this topic of the language of cider. And while I was just producing this, I just added it to the show notes for this here episode 293 with Lee McAlpine. If you scroll down the show notes of any of the episodes on Cider Chat, you'll see at the bottom, it's always mentions in this chat. So if I mention a particular site or a person or an event, you go down to that section and you're going to see Richie Brady's thesis, and the link will be there too. Along with, who is our sponsor for this week's episode. We'll go to that next. The Northwest Cider Club is sponsoring this here episode. So that alone is, you know, great kudos to them, because that's the Pacific Northwest and it's one of the main apple growing regions of the U.S. And as such, cider makers flock there because there's apples to be had. Now, this last cider box being offered for 2021 is titled Big Sky. So immediately you think about Montana, because of course we're talking to Lee McAlpine today. But it's not just Montana apples, it's also Idaho too, which is a beautiful state to boot. And there is one cidery that you're going to be able to find in the Discover box, and that is Meriwether Cider. So talk about, as Emily Ritchie, who is the executive director of the Northwest Cider Association, would say, drink in some Idaho cider. Of course, she wouldn't say it like that. She says it much more flowery. But I mean, I would say it, drink in some Idaho cider. I mean, you got everything to gain, right? Think about it. The folks behind Meriwether Cider is a family. They're transplants from Colorado. And like Lee McAlpine, they were firefighters. And right from the get-go, you got to love that. And they are making cider in Boisman, Idaho. All the apples are grown in the Northwest, and there's no artificial flavors or no added sugars. So kudos to the Ledbetters. That's the family behind Merriweather's. That would be Gig, Ann, and their two daughters, Kate and Molly. Merriweather might sound like a familiar name because it has to do with Merriweather Lewis of the Lewis and Clark Expedition. And the Ledbetter family, actually on Ann's side, is distantly related to Merriweather Lewis, who was the first explorer to cross the Continental Divide into Idaho. So it was a little bit of a homage to place and family, which is what cider's all about. It's all about a connection to place. So if you are interested in checking out Idaho cider, then you want to check out the Discover box, where you will find what is called the Cranberry Crosscut. Now, this cider has tart cranberry in it, and I just want to say, what is the season coming up, holiday season, right? So if you're into turkey, Thanksgiving, whether you're into turkey or not, it's going to go great with that meal. And talk about a great cider to give somebody for the holiday season. So check it out. It's the Discover Box at Northwest Cider Club, nwciderclub.com/podcast. Sign up today. It's online. Get your order in before it sells out. Man, oh man, it is such a busy season for this year, podcaster. I always get a lot of questions about cider making and whatnot, so I always want to refer you to the archived episodes at ciderchat.com/podcast, because there you'll be able to go and search for different episodes on cider making tips. And I do have a cider making 101, so that is a good head start, even listening to that before you like take a course somewhere. Nice idea. I even heard from Aaron up in Maine. He got a press like mine and is rebuilding it. So I was out that when I finally pulled out my press, I was able to take some measurements and send that to him. And of course, we are hearing from folks who want to become patrons of this here podcast. So I want to say a big howdy do to Brock. Thank you for joining the Cider Chat Patreon page. And also from Martin. And Martin said a little email. And he made a donation via the donate button at ciderchat.com and wrote a really lovely note, because I had seen this new Instagram account and I was wondering who it was, and now it is revealed. So let me pull this email up and I'm going to read it to you now. He writes, "I just made a small donation in appreciation for all your hard work on your amazing podcast and wanted to add a note. I've been listening for about a year now, and I have to say it has urged me leaps and bounds along my cider journey. Yay! I am a commercial fisherman in the summer in Alaska, but spent the rest of the year working on art in San Francisco, so I have a lot of studio time to listen to your show, and I think I may have gone through them all at least once and many several times." Wow, that's awesome, Martin. "For a few years, I have been making small batches of cider from my two backyard trees I planted a decade ago. But in part from 2020 pandemic life and more so from your podcast, I decided to step it up and try to find more apples. Yahoo! Like yourself, I've spent a lot of my life in Santa Cruz, and from an old friend found some 100-year-old bellflower trees in the Santa Cruz Mountains that were dripping with fruit." Oh, now I'm salivating. "The nice old lady who gave me the fruit connected me with another neighbor with more apples, which later led to a friend with an organic orchard, etc., etc. I went from about 7 gallons 2 years ago to over 120 last season." Ooh. "The interviews with Ryan of," and that's Ryan Monkman, "of Fieldbird Cider up in Ontario, encouraged me to go straight to barrels. And I just bottled a larger barrel that I aged for a year, stirring the lees weekly, of course, and topping up." Way to go, Martin. "And mixed with some fresh pressed quince / apple for a pet knot that I am very excited to try soon. I turned 40 last winter and decided to ask for trees from anyone looking to get me something. I ended up planting 32 cider varieties on some extended family cattle ranch land in San Jose foothills and have been doing my best to help them thrive. The wild pigs are testing my patience, and I just lost an Arkansas black. As you can see, I have geeked out fully, but have truly enjoyed connecting to the land and digging into the history of cider and my own roots. Coincidentally, my cattle ranching grandparents always kept red Herefords, which no one in my family knew were linked to Herefordshire, England, and that had such a rich connection to cider. I told them that the cattle get their red coats from their centuries of eating apple pomace, which obviously I made up, but seems like it must be true. Also, my mother's side of the family comes from Ea, I think that's how you pronounce it, a small village in the Basque region. So I think a trip to find some long-lost relatives and sip sidra is in order. Mm-hmm. Anyways, sorry to go on and on, but I truly appreciate your passion and hard work. I've learned so much and spoken with several of the folk you've had on your show in this area, and many have helped me along the way. Jake Mann, and that's Jake Mann of Five Mile Orchard, his dad gave me a ton of planting tips and Redfield cider. Those are the folks up there in, that's Olivia and Mike up in Oakland. It's a bottle shop. Has taken most of my fishing earnings, but helped me develop my taste for the good stuff. Yeah, well, good cider costs stuff, and there's a reason why. I'm still a hobbyist, but dipping my toes in selling this recent bottling through friends in the natural wine scene here. So keep an eye out for Pleiades Cider. Thanks again. There is a reason that we do it like this. Signed, Martin. Ba-dum. Oh, Martin, thank you so much. And you can follow Pleiades Cider on Instagram. I see that your account just went up. And it's just lovely hearing your story. And yeah, Santa Cruz, hope to see you there. I just have to say, this is what Cider Chat is all about, this connectivity to everyone worldwide, insider and good cheer. It's really what it's all about. And we're all kind of lifting up each other. So this is my time to say to you out there in Ciderville, if you have listened this far into this episode, we're almost up to minute 17, then you must be getting some value from it. So this is a good time now to make a mental note, maybe stop the podcast, because that's the beauty of podcasts, you could stop it. Go to the Cider Chat Patreon page, sign up there, become a patron today. Actually, I'm going to be releasing a little clip here from Lee where she's going to be talking about the climate and also water rights in Montana. So that's going to go to the Cider Chat Patreon page. Or you could be like Martin and just make a standalone donation. I tell you right now, as I'm rolling out to episode 300, I'm needing that because I'm doing a little something special for episode 300 just for you. So check it out, become a patron, support podcasts. It's listener supported. And without that, we won't be here. So please help out as you can. When I come right back, we're going to begin our featured conversation with Lee McAlpine as she brings us into her backstory of how she got involved with Montana Cider Works and apples and cider in general.
So back in 2002, I planted about 700 trees of English cider trees specifically, and seven varieties, with the intent of growing those bittersweets and bitter sharps to blend with the local Macintosh apple. And the valley is famous for its Macintosh. We grow probably the world's best Macintosh here. And it was an industry that began in 1880. And then kind of after some hard weather and some poor business decisions, the apple industry kind of left the valley. And my intent with establishing the hard cider industry here in the valley was to get a value-added product and to retain what's left of the orchards out there and to encourage more people to plant orchards.
Were you always attracted to apples in particular? Is this something that is like a history for your family and farming, or was this a little bit later in life?
I came to the Bitterroot Valley as a forester and firefighter. And when I started doing my work in the wildland urban interface, I learned that the urban interface here was the most endangered in the nation. And it wasn't endangered from fire, it was endangered from development. And those same areas were the same areas that in the early 1900s were the apple growing areas in the valley. So what was lost was the apple industry here, and that's what really got me interested in it. I love open spaces. I love sustainable agriculture, and blending the two, it seemed natural to collaborate with the local growers and kind of make a value-added product so we could have sustainable agriculture back in the valley.
Right, which you continue to work on to today. I mean, 2002, that's an early start in the cidery business for the U.S. market, for sure. I'm wondering how you actually thought, let me go and get these English varietals to plant. Was there a particular cider or experience that you had that said, I want to go in that direction versus, like, say, a French varietal?
Back in the 80s, there was a British pub movement, and I was introduced to cider and Perry's at that time, and they were of the English varieties. And so that was where my first knowledge of the beverage came from. And I later on met Drew Zimmerman, who he, along with some other cider makers, has started something called the Northwest Cider Society, which then became the Northwest Cider Association. And with his guidance, we selected the varieties that we thought might do the best in our climate here in Montana.
How are they doing, by the way? You know, I mean, I know I want to talk about the McIntosh, but how are these English varieties doing? What have you found over the years?
We have a huge problem with fire blight here, and a lot of the varieties just will be decimated by the fire blight. And then also we have a shorter growing season than they do in England, and so some of the varieties that we'd like to have just won't ripen in this climate. On the other hand, we have found a handful of varieties that do really, really well here, and we can make exceptional cider here in the valley.
Yeah, I have tasted some of the Montana cider, and it is fantastic. So let's talk about the McIntosh. What specifically do you think really lends this particular apple to be so coveted by Montana makers? There's a maker out in Oregon at Ballman's who's bringing in McIntosh from Montana specifically. And so, like folks like myself out in New England, you know, we grow Max too, but something about the Montana McIntosh really makes it a really unique variety for that area. Could you lend a little bit on why you think that might be?
It's my understanding that it's the differential temperatures between the day and the night. It's so cool here in the evenings, but then very, very warm during the days during the growing season, which intensifies those flavors. Also, there's 33 sports of McIntosh out there, and some of the sports that we grow here in the valley are commonly referred to as Black Macs, and those have, in addition to that beautiful sweet and tart kind of juxtaposition in flavor, they also have kind of a cinnamony after flavor to it. That's really, that note is just beautiful. It comes through in the cider.
Can you explain what you mean by a sport for folks who aren't necessarily cider makers or orchardists, for the listeners?
Sure. A variety, an apple variety, can have sub-varieties underneath it that are all still McIntosh, but they're genetically different enough that you can taste the difference, and those are considered named sports.
Now, you have a McIntosh, and McIntosh is considered an heirloom. And I consider any apple that's kind of been around for 100 years to be an heirloom. Can you tell us about that particular bottle of McIntosh that folks might be able to get from Montana Cider Works?
McIntosh that I use is all from one orchard. It's called Frost Top Orchards in Corvallis, Montana. And that is, that's one of those orchards that has that beautiful cinnamony note to their apples. And it was one of the first ones I contacted when I started this project. I went to their orchard and I said, hey, you know, why wouldn't you be doing a value-added product like cider? And they said, well, we already make cider. And I said, no, not fresh juice. I mean cider. And they said, oh, you mean like the fermented beverage? And it's like, yes. And they said, no, we're not interested in that. But we'd love to sell you our apples that we can't sell to the fresh market. And then they handed me Frank Browning's book called The Story of the Fruit of Temptation, Apples. If you've read that, it's a marvelous read, and it just totally got me hooked.
That's wonderful. I love it. And I'll tell you, people listening out there in Ciderville right now, when you're talking about that cinnamony notes, boy, we're all like licking our chops, just getting thirsty for that Montana Macintosh. That's a delightful note to have on an apple for sure. And I think you're doing something really special there. I know some of the trees are pretty old. Would you say that's true about the trees that you're pulling off these particular apples from Frosttop?
Yeah, so Frosttop is the Al and Mary are the second owners of that orchard, and its origins, I think, post-date the original apple boom from the 1900s. It is an older orchard. It's been around certainly for 50 years, and they do a wonderful job there, and they're just a delightful group to work with.
Would it be my understanding that you're pulling apples from a number of different orchards in the region, including your own, and that due to climate and different weather patterns, like a frost or something where you might lose an early frost either in the spring or in the fall, that could really impact your apples, I suspect. Or are you predominantly pulling it off of your own orchards?
So in the recent past, I've been using almost exclusively my own apples, but I'm in a very small production mode right now. Anytime you're trying to ramp up production and you're in Montana, there just aren't enough bittersweet and bittersharp apples to supply the needs of myself and the other cideries now in Montana. So we do try to source our apples from the Rocky Mountain region. There's a lot of apples in Idaho, for example, that you can get.
Yeah. So it's kind of a small community now for Montana cider makers. You being the first commercial maker, I know that you're in between Missoula, Montana, and you're probably a little bit north of Boisman. Is that correct in terms of where Darby is located?
Right. We're about a two-hour drive south of Missoula, and we're about an hour away from the Idaho border.
Now, you don't have a tasting room from Montana Cider Works. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're what's considered a domestic winery. We can sell product, but we are not a tasting room.
That's fine, because people certainly can order it online or come out to Montana and visit the state itself. But in your town, and I looked it up a little bit here, Lee, it looks like it's a small town, kind of like my own. Would it still be under 1,000 people that live in Darby?
Yes, it's true, but we've been discovered lately. There's a TV show called Yellowstone, and it actually is being filmed here.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. That makes everybody really busy. So can you give us like a little visual of what, besides going to the TV show Yellowstone, what it would look like kind of stepping out even in the orchard, kind of like the elevation and a little bit about the soil there?
Sure. The elevation at the orchard is 4,000 feet. We have the nearest neighbor is about a half a mile away. And we have this tremendous view of the Bitterroot range of the Rocky Mountains. And then that's to our west. And to our east, we have the Sapphire Mountains. So the valley is nestled between those two mountain ranges. And then the Bitterroot River flows through the center of it. But you get a great sense of open spaces and big sky Montana from here.
Yeah, she's absolutely beautiful. I could just imagine what that looks like. And the air quality, must be just kind of crystal clear. Would that be a good assumption?
Well, it is, except for fire season. In the fire season, it tends to be a bit smoky here.
All right. So that's good to know for folks coming out to Montana. When is fire season typically happening? Is that a fall issue?
It really is mostly in the fall, yes.
Yeah, that's rough. Here you are in Montana, which does have a long history of growing apples, but I wonder what folks locally, or even in Darby itself, there's no tasting room, but I'm sure that your cider can be had and folks know who you are. How do you find just the local climate and residents, and maybe a little further out of that circle? What are they thinking about cider these days? And have you seen something kind of change since 2002 to 2021?
Absolutely. In 2002, people didn't even have much of a palate for wine here, but we've matured quite a bit in our desires for cider, and the advent of two or three more cideries in most of the urban areas, there's a cidery available to you, and there's a lot of interest in unique flavors, and I think that stems from the beer industry here. It's very experimental, loves to do crazy one-offs, and I think that those people are really interested in trying new ciders too.
Yeah, it's definitely a symbiotic relationship. So you have like the food culture in Montana too is kind of interesting. Is there something that is unique to Darby food-wise, or anything that when you're drinking cider that you reach for and say, I want to pair my McIntosh, or we'll be talking shortly about the North Fork traditional?
So we have a fabulous cheesemaker in the valley, Lifeline Cheese, and they make a tremendous cheddar cheese that goes just absolutely perfect with the cider. And in addition to just being excellent cheese, they're also biodynamic, which is kind of like organic on steroids. And so, and once again, we have a great relationship with them, and I always like to suggest a nice Lifeline cheese with one of our ciders.
Mm, that sounds perfect. I love it. Now, you have been in this biz for a while. I know that you're also part of Budwood organization too. Can we take a little moment to talk about that and what Budwood is all about?
Sure. Budwood is something that I got together with a couple other cider aficionados, and we said, hey, you know what the growers in the valley really need is to collaborate and to share equipment, share resources, share knowledge, and to work together to try to rebuild the apple industry here in the valley, and also to promote the hard cider business. And that's how Budwood got started. It's kind of a grassroots thing that is, it's, I can't say that it's like, you know, the membership is not enormous, but it seems like every month somebody comes, signs on to our webpage and says, hey, I want to start an orchard. Can you tell me what varieties I should plant? I'm in eastern Montana. Is there anything that'll grow out here? You know, those kinds of questions we get all the time. And so I'm hoping that Budwood is helping those new growers, you know, plant their orchards and have a resource to go to.
You bet. I wonder, are there a number of cider, you know, home fermenters? Are you seeing a rise in that? Kind of like we saw with home brewers at one time before craft beer kind of took off to the level it is now. What is it like currently for, you know, folks just wanting to get some local juice and ferment?
Last weekend, we had McIntosh Apple Days here, a celebration every year, celebrating the history of apples. And it seems like at that event, there's always two or three people that come up to me and say, hey, I want to start making my own cider. How should I go about it? Or I'm having this problem or that problem with my cider. What can you recommend I do to improve my cider making? So yes, there's a huge interest in making your own cider. And I do think it's the fermenters in general, whether you're making mead or kombucha or beer, they're all interested in also doing ciders.
Yeah, definitely shared topic. So now you have piqued my interest, and I'm sure the listeners out there in Ciderville, on McIntosh Apple Days. How long has that been going on for, and what can you expect to take place if you attend McIntosh Apple Days?
Apple Days I would say it's been going on for probably 20, 30 years. I don't know exactly, but it's sponsored by the museum in downtown Hamilton. And it starts off with wonderful farmer's market that is just huge. And they highlight all things apple. And then after that farmer's market and into the night, we have Liquid Apple Night. And that's where local cideries will come and they pour their beverages for people, and you get a chance to talk one-on-one with people and tell them about the apple industry here in the valley and where the hard cider industry is headed, and answer any questions and kind of do an educational thing, kind of bring up the knowledge on styles of cider and the different ciders that are locally available to them.
That's great. So I while you're talking, I looked it up. It's the 42nd annual McIntosh Apple Day. So that's
excellent.
Wow, huh? And does it normally take place in October then, if folks were kind of setting a little time to head out to Montana?
Yes, it's always the first weekend in October. That's supposed to be around the time the McIntosh ripen, but sometimes the McIntosh just don't know that, and they ripen a little earlier or a little later than that.
And could we expect that Montana Cider Works would be pouring at McIntosh Apple Days?
Absolutely.
All right, great. That's good news. Wow, what an extra bonus to learn about another fun event celebrating apples. So let's talk a little bit about, let's go back to Montana Cider Works, because a couple years ago, I was talking to Ryle, who has a mobile canning pressing apple press that he travels around. Do you know who I'm talking about there, Ryle?
Yes, I do. He presses my fruit every year.
Oh, he does. Okay, great. Great guy. Well, we had him on Cider Chat, and I heard at one point that you were maybe going to be moving out of making cider. Was that kind of a moment in your life, or was that a rumor, or is there any truth to that? Because, you know, from what I have tasted of your cider, I'd hate to see anything like that happen. So where is Lee right now in terms of Montana Cider Works and your future plans for the cidery?
I am interested in retiring, but I'd love to hand the baton off to somebody who'd like to continue Montana Cider Works. And if any of your listeners are interested, please give me a call, because I'd like to hand the baton off and have somebody take the business and grow it forward.
Okay, well, that's great. We'll make sure to have all the links so folks can contact you. Without that happening right now, where do you kind of see your cidery? You know, you've kind of established yourself. You're making tremendous cider. You know, you have large format bottles. Is that primarily what you have, is large format and then smaller bottles? You're not doing any cans. Is that right?
That's correct. We just have it in bottles, the 500 and 750 milliliters.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of cideries just want to maintain themselves as a regional cidery. And for folks to kind of seek them out, you haven't taken that step to do a tasting room. Was there a reason why you took that path in particular? And this would be for folks out there who are startup cideries or in the business. You know, someone like yourself, you're, you know, for Americans, you're one of the few out there who's been in business for so long. So any tips you could have on that, why you said, hey, I didn't want to take that route and have a tasting room?
Well, I knew that I had to grow my own apples, because the apples that I wanted, the bittersweet, the bitter sharps, the English varieties, just weren't available. So I was going to have to grow them. And so it made sense for me to live on the property with the orchard and the cidery. The challenge there is that I'm pretty far away from any population center, and cideries do best that have direct sales right to your customers, and there just aren't that many people out there. So I would encourage people to develop a tasting room in a populated area and then perhaps have their orchard separately. It's maybe not living the dream exactly like most apple growers see it, but it's a reality. It's important to be able to take your products to the customer.
But of course, life changes, and you could become a destination too. Obviously, if they're making a movie there, Darby has become a destination. Be careful what you ask for, right? My goodness.
Right, exactly.
Oh, my. Well, let's go to talking about your ciders. And I know that right now the Northwest Cider Club is going to be offering two bottles from Montana Cider Works. One, the McIntosh Heirloom that we already spoke about. And then also the North Fork Traditional, which harbors back to your original passion for English-style cider. Can you tell us a little bit what folks might find in this bottle and why you like to make this style?
Well, it really is my interpretation of an English style cider. Lots of tannin, a lot of those kind of woody, grassy, smoky kind of flavors. It's a semi-dry. It's not austere like some people imagine an English style cider to be. But there's quite a bit of sharpness, and then I also like to use quite a bit of crab apple in there to bring up the tart kind of notes at the end, and I also age it on oak. So I use a French medium post oak, and to give it a little more of a traditional flavor.
When you say on oak, is that in a barrel? Do you have like a barrel program at Montana Cider Works?
I have a very small barrel program, and it's for my Pommeau that we'll be releasing next year as part of our 20th anniversary celebration. But the North Fork is aged with oak chips. I use poly to do my fermentation, and so I use oak chips.
Your cidery itself, how big is your like little production room? You know, and we've talked about everything on Cider Chat, from like a room that's like 10 by 10, as you know, a building gotten from like a local, you know, self, it's already built, landed on the property, and folks made into a cidery, to, you know, mega cideries. But what do you have there? What's the size of your cidery, and what kind of tanks do you use? And
it's what they consider a nano cidery. It's the fermentation room itself is probably 20 feet by 20 feet. The entire building, I think, is only 40 feet long. So we just use the heating and cooling system that's there. We don't have jacketed stainless steel tanks. It's all poly. And the climate here, you know, fits right in with making cider. It's like Montana was made, the climate was made for making cider. As long as you make it the way I do, which takes like all winter and then you bottle in the spring. But we have these perfect, a bit of warm weather to kick off your fermentation in the fall. And then it goes cold quite quickly. And you can have a nice, slow, even ferment through the winter. And then in the spring, as it warms up again, if you'd like to do a malolactic, it warms up for that. And then you can bottle and get back to the orchard again.
And you saying that, it sounds like you're more of a traditional cidery versus a modern cidery, which would be doing a very quick turnaround of ciders. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. It's not we're not interested in doing flavored ciders per se. You know, we have done a cherry cider in the past, and we currently offer a hop cider, but all of our ciders are very cidery ciders, very traditional ciders.
And the Darby Pub Cider is pretty popular too. Let's tell listeners a little bit about that one.
Well, the thing that makes Darby Pub Cider kind of unique is that it's got a the back sweetening is with the Macintosh. And so you get a little bit of a fruit forward experience with that cider. But it's all made with those Rocky Mountain apples that that are high in tannins, and a little bit of uniqueness. One of the things that's in there is a Spartan apple. And the Spartan was allegedly a cross between a Macintosh and a Newtown Pippin. And a lot of people are familiar with the Newtown Pippin cider. Excuse me. It's a delicious cider. It's kind of a, it lends, that parentage lends itself to a wine flavor to the cider. Unfortunately, they found out that, yes, Macintosh is the mother, but they don't know who the father is.
Not yet. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the way it's going. That's great. It looks like you won an award at the Royal Bath and West Show in England back in 2017, a gold medal, and have been winning a number of awards with this particular cider. Are all your ciders typically available year-round if folks are ordering them online? Is that something that they could expect if they're checking out your website?
Right. Yes, we pasteurize all of our ciders, so they are shelf stable and available online.
Wonderful. And these are your standards. We have the North Fork, we have the Darby Pub, the McIntosh, and right now I see that you have what's called the Hopped Up Heritage Cider. Does this kind of, is this like your standard offerings, or does it vary from that?
I like to do a single variety most years that I call small batch. And so small batch will change from year to year depending on the availability of a certain apple, or just my interest in a certain apple, to see what kind of flavors I can coax out of it. And so that one really does change. Some people call it my seasonal, is the small batch.
Okay, nice. And is that something that they have to come out to Montana to get, or is that something that we could get via VinoShipper?
It'll be on the VinoShipper page. The one that you won't see on there, the one that you'll have to come to the cidery for, will be the Pomelo that we're releasing in the spring.
You want to talk a little bit about that? And for listeners, this is like a French term for, which is a mix of apple brandy and juice. What brandy are you using for that?
I fermented my own cider and then took it to a distiller up near Glacier National Park. It's Glacier Distilling, and they then distilled it for me for the spirits to add to it. And then I also purchased from them oak barrels, small oak barrels that had whiskey in it. And now that Pomelo has been aged for 3 years.
Okay, great. So you're well in that classic range that the French put the label on. 3 years is a good amount. What can we experience from that? Because that could really range, too, as being kind of almost buttery or fruity. How's it coming out?
So it's coming out kind of spiritous, so almost more like a cognac.
Was there a particular oak that it was aged on?
It's American white oak.
Nice. Okay. Lovely. And folks are going to have to come to Darby itself, or there's a number of locations in Montana where folks can purchase that. Would that be right?
I'm going to have that one just at the cidery.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. We're coming your way. Watch out. Don't let the don't let the production crew know about that. When would that be rolling out, do you suspect?
Hopefully in March.
Okay. Well, I just want to say, Lee, you know, getting the opportunity to speak to all the Montana cider makers that I have, it just sounds like such a great time to be making cider in Montana. And of course, the passion for the McIntosh, I love that, because I've made quite a few McIntosh ciders myself over the years. And I think it does lend itself. It's a nice apple that people don't expect to do that, because they typically just want to eat it or put it in the lunch bag. But what you're doing there, and everything, cider tourism, is that a thing at this point for Montana? Are you seeing people kind of drifting through and asking around, hey, can I, you know, I heard that Lee lives around here somewhere. Can I find her?
You know, I'd love to see some more cideries develop in the western side of the state, and it could really be a nice cider trail. I think that's something that the Budwood organization will be working on in the future. And also, I want to give a nod to our ag station here. Montana State University still maintains an ag station in Corvallis, Montana, not far from here. And they are really all about the hard cider industry and giving us the scientific information we need to be successful.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I think it's going to definitely roll in that direction, because you have the total trifecta of fantastic cider, you have the scenery and the people and the food. I mean, wow, it's definitely, as I like to say, cider going up in Montana moving forward. And you, Lee McAlpine, are a big part of this amazing movement for Montana. I mean, is there anything to be said about the fact that you were kind of a lone star there for a little bit, and now cider has gone on this other trajectory, you know, kicking up in more recent years? I'm kind of curious about your thoughts on that, having the long view on it all.
You know, it's been a wonderful ride. I've enjoyed the last 20 years immensely. The cider people are just phenomenal. They're just such generous, good-hearted people. Everybody is friendly, and it's just a really, if you're going to be involved with a bunch of people, these are the ones you want to be with. They're fun, and they're just really great folks.
Who wants to do a road trip to Montana next year, 2022, as she celebrates her 20th year? And again, there's links in the show notes to contact Lee if you're thinking, this cidery might just be the ticket for me. How cool would that be? You got to let me know. Come on. All of Ciderville wants to know now, because we want to see this fantastic cidery that has made a name for Montana on the map as far as cider is concerned. Keep on going forward for the next 100 years. I imagine, Ciderville, that you are pretty thirsty right now for some Montana cider. All you have to do is go to nwciderclub.com/podcast, and you could go to the elevated box and get signed up today for that North Fork that we're talking about, and the McIntosh. I mean, geez, talk about doing a whole, tasting of McIntosh from this region. And, of course, what Christine Walters is going to be doing with Montana McIntosh in this release, too. So a lot of fun stuff on that kind of scale of being able to compare a single varietal cider, such as the Mac, which is classically considered just a lunchbox apple, which is just so wrong, and now being able to taste it in bottles made by these fantastic cider makers. I mean, this is like a dream come true. Hello, 2021. Feels so good. Yeah, again, go to nwciderclub.com/podcast and check it out today. Sign up. Well, Ciderville, we've come to the end of this here episode 293, and next week we have another Montana cider maker, so stay tuned for that. And in the meanwhile, I'm going to go out and enjoy this beautiful fall day. I got some Baldwin apples that I picked from a super old tree, going to be munching and playing with that and just enjoying the cider season. And with that, I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller, signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like ponds. We love orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider. We like ponds. We like orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Oh, yes, we do.
Like ponds.
Oh, yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun. There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We
like ponds.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like orchards having some fun.
Yeehaw!